Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Family of Opportunity, home of Expert Insights Publishing, Publish Magazine, Broadcast, and Global Communities, where visionaries and those on the rise come together to create immediate impact. And I'm very excited today because with me I have Michael Bloom. Michael, welcome.
Thank you so much, Vicki. It's such a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you.
I would love if you could start by just giving us a brief explanation about the wonderful work and contribution you're making to the world.
Absolutely. It'd be, again, an honor to do so. A couple of years ago, I actually launched my coaching and consulting business, Bloom Coaching and Performance, with the goal to support fellow family caregivers and professional caregivers to sidestep burnout and recharge their caregiving energy so they can provide sustainable support to their loved ones and clients for the long term. Caregiving is something that's near and dear to my heart because I jumped into the role very suddenly when my father became terminally ill back in 2009. But just to let you know, back in 2004, the reason cancer is such a prevalent part of my journey in care, my mom at the age of 77 was diagnosed with stage 4B lymphoma Hodgkin's lymphoma after she collapsed in a store shopping with my dad. She ended up being taken to the hospital and diagnosed. We had no idea she had cancer. She had a high threshold for, I guess, pain and discomfort. And when she went through all the testing and the diagnosis and got an oncologist to refer to her, wonderful oncologist, but she was concerned given my mother's state that the chemotherapy treatment would actually kill her before the cancer. But my mother, being somebody who loved life and wanted to, you know, be around still with my dad and me, said, let's do it. Let's go for it. So she sought treatment, was a miraculous cancer survivor. In fact, her oncologist held her as a miraculous story, and they developed a really close relationship. And over the next 5 years, my dad would serve as her primary caregiver, and I provided secondary caregiving support. But one summer day in 2009, my mother called me very scared and frantic on the phone, saying that my father was acting very strange, because one of the things that happened with my mom after she went through treatment, she ended up very frail on the other side of treatment, physically limited, needing a lot of physical support. So my father did all the household, you know, took care of all the household responsibilities, medication, meals, and all those things. So on this particular morning, when he came down to supposedly get breakfast ready, he didn't do it, and he seemed very confused. And when my mother inquired of him what was going on, he seemed to get upset and stormed out of the room and went into his home office, which prompted her call to me. At that point, I lived about 5 miles apart, so when I heard the call, I drove over, and as I'm driving, I'm thinking, what could be going on? The night before, I had a nice conversation with my dad. He told me he had gone banking and food shopping. He got extra groceries for me, which I was actually going to pick up that next night. And we had this pleasant conversation. But when I arrived at the house, I greeted her. My mom pointed out where my dad had gone. I knocked on his home office door, and a faint voice said, come in. I opened the door, and he was kind of slumped over in his chair. And I asked him how he was doing. He said, not well. So I called 911, and the EMTs came out, and we discovered that after doing some monitoring, he had a heart rate of 25. He was taken to the hospital. A pacemaker was implanted, but apparently he had a catastrophic cardiac failure event that probably started while he was sleeping the night before. So he had hours of oxygen deprivation to the brain, which led to vascular dementia, which means that from that point forward, he would need 24/7 support because he no longer had cognitive ability to take care of himself, and therefore he could no longer take care of my mother. I often equate when a family health crisis happens, it's almost like approaching a swimming pool that, normally when we approach a swimming pool, we like to dip our toe in the water to see if the water is comfortable before we jump in. But when it comes to caregiving and a crisis happens in the family and you approach the pool of care, you don't get to test the waters to see if they're comfortable. You jump into the deep end, and then your life is never the same. And that's what happened to me. So I jumped into the pool of care, eventually moved in with my parents because I'm an only child, and became their full-time live-in caregiver, putting my career aside at the time. Eventually, I started my own coaching and consulting business so I could keep them out of nursing home care and support them while I could be of support for others, because, you know, one of the things in my background, too, is I have years of professional caregiving experience as I professionally supported individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. So I had many tools in my tool belt from providing support to them. But when you jump into that accidental caregiving journey yourself, in supporting your own loved ones and your parents, that's one experience that is really personal and deep and transformational, and it really changes your lens and your view of the world. So I really feel it's my mission. My parents have since passed. My father died later in 2009, and my mother passed on Mother's Day of 2012, both lovingly in my arms in the comfort of their own home. I feel privileged that I was able to grant them the ability to age in place and pass with dignity, transition with dignity in the comfort of their own home. And I want to do my best to support caregivers and their families to determine what is the best pathway for them. Because every individual is unique and every caregiving journey is unique. And when you're touched by cancer or other traumatic illnesses and diseases, it's so important for the caregiver to seek support to sustain their role. So I hope
No question, Michael. So I was curious, could you give us a little bit of information about some of the challenges you face since you don't have the time to wait in? You just have to jump in many times as a caregiver for people you love, and you have this fear of the possibility of losing them with the diagnosis. So what did that look like for you, and what are some of the challenges some of the people you work with now that they come up with this?
Sure. That's a wonderful and a great question. So some of the challenges are when you first jump in and you're in that, you know, in the mix, you really just have to keep taking action and keep moving forward. You don't really have a lot of time to think, and it's very scary. And a lot of caregivers fall into the trap of trying to be Superman or Superwomen. And I find this with a lot of caregivers. A lot of family caregivers have that step up to the plate, have been professional caregivers as well as I was. So you often think that you know how to navigate systems, you know how to do things, so you will try to do it all. And a lot of family caregivers, even if they don't have that experience, don't want to burden other people. So they will, again, could potentially add a lot of stress to their lives, and like stress that mounts up over time, I like to equate that to a balloon. You can only put so much air into a balloon before it will pop. And if caregivers just let that stress keep mounting, and again, caregivers and their loved ones are truly dealing with some of the most frightening situations that we ever have to deal with in life. You know, these are truly life and death decisions, some of the painful decisions. And when your loved one goes in for painful treatments or gets stuck with, you know, and prodded with needles and tests and are just going through this awful trajectory of the illness, it takes a big toll. Although you, the caregiver, may not feel it, you may not be getting the needle prick, you may not be getting the blood draw, you may not be getting the chemotherapy treatment or the radiation, but you walk hand in hand with your loved one and you kind of feel it through them. And your loved one is going through such a traumatic journey, and it's scary and frightening. And during this time of providing care, and I find this in my own journey and also with other caregiving situations, we can at times lash out at our loved ones, or our loved ones lash out at us, because, again, they're the combinations. They're the partners that trust one another the most, and we tend to share our feelings nakedly with those that we are closest to. And especially if it's in a parent-child relationship or a spousal relationship, care and care partner. So it just, again, with that journey, you can just experience a lot of stress, a lot of fear. And, you know, if caregivers don't do things along the way, along the journey of care to take care of themselves, that stress balloon will pop, and then they will achieve burnout. And if they achieve burnout, it can have real awful physical consequences on the family as well, too, because if the caregiver becomes ill or becomes incapacitated, then the family can really enter into a crisis because the loved one is depending on you to care for them. So it's so important for caregivers, and one of the things I try to do when I partner with the caregivers I have the honor and privilege to support is to really help them work on plans to take care of themselves along the way, because self-care is not selfish. And if you get out periodically and take care of yourself, then you can, you'll have the energy to sustain your role so you don't achieve burnout. One of the stories I like to share in terms of my work with clients is I had a client who was a gentleman who was supporting his wife who was going through a terminal illness, and he had retired a few years earlier, and in his early days of retirement, one of the things he was looking forward to was he golfed 3 days a week. He was a golf was an important hobby for him, and he did it 3 days a week. When his wife got the illness that he needed to support, and it was a long trajectory of illness, he stopped golfing completely. And when we had had our conversation, he did not see any ability to golf any time, and he couldn't see a time where he could golf again until she had passed. And we were able to sort of talk that through because maybe he couldn't, it wasn't realistic for him to plan to golf 3 times a week, but this was an activity that he really enjoyed. So we processed why couldn't he golf maybe once a month. So again, it put something in his calendar, and he was concerned about finding people that could take care of his wife while he went out to golf. And we said, even if you couldn't find a friend, family member or friend, there are home health agencies that can provide you with a few hours of support or half a day of support so you can get out to golf. And we talked through when that investment that you make in yourself once a month to do an activity that you love helps sustain you in your role of caregiving. And he realized that was the case. And I'm happy to say that he started to plan for a monthly getaway from that point forward. And it was so important. And again, it gave him something, you know, a really nice reward that he put in his calendar, because caregivers, each and every week, our calendars are populated with appointments, tests, responsibilities, and tasks that we have to fulfill, and we tend to not put joyful things in our calendar. And I think it's so vital that we do that when we're in the midst of a journey of care. Otherwise, life becomes all work, no play, and no joy. And the caregivers, most of all, deserve that. They deserve time to take care of themselves and put themselves first at times.
That is so important. So to come through this and really, really be able to survive and thrive yourself, in addition to helping those that you love, what are some tips you might offer? And what have you seen personally happen the other side of this that are real gains for people, that are triumphs?
Sure, absolutely. That's a great question, too. So one of the tips that I have, caregivers often don't, you know, when a friend or a family member sometimes, and I know this early from my experience because I'm an only child who was caring for both parents and both all of a sudden had significant support needs, my father from a mental capacity and my mother from physical, you know, capacity. So I would have friends and family members come up to me or talk to me on the phone and be like, you know, what can I do to help? And I often didn't know in the early stages because I really couldn't think or wrap my brain around what they could help with because I was so in the midst of it, not getting a lot of sleep, just trying to do everything myself, that Superman or Superwoman syndrome I talk about. So one of the best things you could do as a caregiver is make a list. Just sit down and make a growing list of things that you do on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, and on an as-needed basis to take care of your household and take care of your loved one. Just put all these things on a list. And the reason I say that is that when you get that question then, or people are offering to give you support, you then can share this list, and you then have a menu of support options that other people could self-select what they can do based upon their skill, their desire, and their talent. And that's a great way to get things done and to get help that you need. So one of the triumphs I suggest is that's happened is people have really done this. And I often find this to be successful. I'm an only child. And, you know, I didn't have siblings, fortunately, to have disagreements with and challenges during the journey of care with my parents. It was my parents and I making the decisions. And then, you know, I was the primary caregiver, and I didn't have expectations for other people to step up to the plate. When you have larger families, you tend to have one adult child who may step up to be the primary caregiver. And when other siblings or other members of the family don't step up to the plate in the way they believe they should, or when they're, you know, seeking support, there tends to be some disappointment, you know, anger that can arise. So one of the ways this activity can help is not everybody feels good or capable about doing some of the activities that are involved in caregiving, you know. So instead of directing people to do certain things, if you have a menu, other siblings can choose what they want to do, how they can contribute, how they can help. And if they choose one thing that they feel that they could contribute well, and then they actually fulfill it and do it, and you reinforce them and thank them for doing it, it will build a positive energy for that person to do more. And this is something I found in supporting you know, my primary caregivers who have other family members who can help. When they provide this list or menu, I like to call it a menu of choices, other people will gladly step up to the plate to choose something, because when there's 50 or 75 or 100 tasks, certainly one can find something to do. And it could be something that's very simple, such as just, you know, coming over for a social few hours and taking care of, you know, I think of some, you know, you may have some male family members in the household, I mean, in your family, that could come to the house and maybe do some repair things, or maybe even help with some, you know, taking your automobile to the shop that's your primary mode of transportation to take your loved ones to medical appointments. Maybe they could help get some repairs done. So it doesn't have to be directly related to the care of your loved one, but it is related to how you keep your household moving forward, how you keep supporting, you know, get the support you need to take care of the millions of things that caregivers have to take care of throughout the year. You can get that help you need when you need it. And it's a much more team-oriented approach to getting support.
Oh, that's fabulous. So coming out the other side of this, what was your learning experience, and what did you take away as something that really changed your life for the better?
Sure. So my, you know, again, my learning experience that came from this, and especially as I got into the last few years of caring for my mother, it really moved forward with my business and pursued coach training. You know, I do also, I was very blessed in that I have a lot of education. I have a master's in psychology and a master's in social policy. I had a wonderful career supporting individuals with disabilities, which I left to care for my parents and put them front and center. But what I realized along the journey, and I wanted to really keep my mom out of a nursing home, I launched my own business and pursued, you know, I went and did, you know, professional training and retreats over the course of the year. I found loving people to come and stay with my mom for weekends. I had lots of female friends, and we would rotate, and some of my friends would come over and have girls' weekend with my mom, so I could get away guilt-free and pursue these opportunities and continue to grow and start a successful business and support my mom for the long term. And I guess the message I want to say is a lot of caregivers experience regret because they give up, or they push their own life to the side, or their own personal and professional pursuits to the side, to solely and squarely focus on the caregiving role. And if you're in the midst of caregiving for months or years, in some caregivers with some illnesses, it could be a decade or more of care, you're never going to get that time back. So the biggest takeaway is find a way to pursue what you want to do in your own life and support your loved one. And if you find ways and support from others to help you do that, you won't have regret for those years, and those years will become much more fulfilling and enjoyable. So that would be the greatest message. You can do it all. It doesn't have to be either or, caregiving or living your life. It can all be one, and that's just part of, and then that becomes part of your life. It doesn't define your whole life.
Oh, that is so powerful and so inspiring. So, Michael, tell me, if someone feels kind of stuck in the muck and the mire of all this and it's new to them, do you have some kind of action tip to get them started that could really inspire them into a more balanced way of experiencing caregiving?
Absolutely. And actually, the best way to say this is I have a mantra. I have a few mantras, but one of my main and favorite mantra is put chocolate in your pillbox. And the reason I say to put chocolate in your pillbox, I'm a chocoholic, so I love chocolate. But the chocolate's a metaphor. And this really resonates with caregivers because caregivers are so routine-oriented because they have so many things they need to focus on in the care of their loved one. And I know for me, pillboxes were front and center. For a while, I was filling two pillboxes for both of my parents to make sure I could give them their medications at the appropriate time. So, but when it comes to put chocolate in your pillbox, the chocolate is a metaphor. What gives you joy in your own life? What are the things that excite you? And like the pillbox is a metaphor for your calendar, and I go back to that. The biggest action step you could take is think of something that gives you joy, look at your calendar, set a date, put that event in your calendar, and then find others to support you, another person, at least one, that can make sure that you fulfill that activity. So maybe it's providing you with some respite support to care for your loved one so you get out and do that. It's vital that you have something good to look forward to each and every week in your calendar, because if we don't put things in that we have to look forward to, then life can become very depressing, stress-filled, and that's where the risk of burnout can creep in. So that's really the big thing. So, you know, I encourage all of you, you know, that are listening to this, put chocolate in your pillbox and move forward each and every week. Find a way to dose yourself regularly with joy. It'll sustain your energy during the journey of care.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Michael, thank you so much for sharing the wealth of information that is so inspiring. And thank you so much for the amazing work you're doing and the contribution you're making to this area that is so important to us all. I know people will want to connect with you and learn more about what you do and tap into your wisdom. Is there a website where they can go to do that?
Absolutely. So the best place for them to go would be to bloomforcoach.com. So that's www.bloomforcoach.com. You can learn about services, and I offer lots of free resources for caregivers to sustain their energy along the journey of care. And you can learn more about my book, called The Accidental Caregiver Survival Guide, Your Roadmap to Caregiving Without Regret. So I thank you so much, Vicki, for this opportunity.
Thank you so much. And Michael, one more time, if you could give your website, I just want to make sure everyone got that.
Sure. It's www.bloomforcoach.com, bloomforcoach.com. Thank you.
Wonderful. Michael, thank you so much for the generosity of your time and your giving of so much great information. We really appreciate having you here.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Vicki.
And for anyone who would like to learn more about Expert Insights, our best-selling books, our award-winning magazines, global communities, and broadcasts, you can find us at getei.com. That's getei.com. And everyone have a wonderful week.